Hello, listeners. Welcome back to Inner and Outer Reality, In Reality and Outside. I'm your host, Sean Penalbert, and today with us we have...
Francois Pointeau.
Francois, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for being on.
Yeah.
So, what do you think life is? What are your thoughts on life? Like, what do you think reality is and everything? Like, what's the first thing that comes to mind?
You know, the old cliche, reality is what you make of it, and there's a reason why that's a cliche, because it is exactly that. But what do I think of life? You know, you always start with the big questions.
It's such a broad question, yeah, I understand. But whatever, so in my thoughts, whatever is coming to your mind right now is both... correct and incorrect. Like, it's not the final answer, you know, but it's a part of the solution.
You know, I think that you discover yourself as you go. When I was in my 20s, I wanted to be a poet and a published poet. I wanted to be recognized as a poet. I wanted people to know me as a poet. And I worked so hard at it. I worked hours and hours and hours and hours every day at being a poet. And now it doesn't really matter to me if anybody knows whether I'm a fucking poet or not.
And like, but what's so significant about that is, like, even if you're not what you wanted to be, like becoming this like poet or something like that, you still are a poet. Like, and the things that you learned got you to this point here in reality. Like, every step you took was a level of predeterminism and free will that got you right here at this table, right here in this moment. And that's so significant, you know, like, if you hadn't done one of those things, like, any of those steps, you may not even be here right now.
You know, I think about that all the time, and I've been having this conversation with a friend of mine who works with me at my business, and it's like, every time you make a decision in life, your life is taking in another direction.
And a multiverse, kind of thing.
Yeah, and, you know, there were a lot of decisions made for me my whole life that I didn't have a say in them, like moving to America, getting deported, getting kicked out of America, moving back to America, all these things, you know, not being able to work legally when I was a kid because I was didn't have the right papers, not being able to go to school. And there's a lot of things that I was so angry about when I was young, and now it's like, okay, it's just who I am. That's part of who I am. And you know, you can keep thinking back, what if my family hadn't left Paris when I was a kid and we had stayed in Paris? What kind of man would I be today?
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't be the man that I am now. Doesn't mean that I'd be a better man or a worse man. I just wouldn't be the man that I am now.
You'd just be something different. It's completely subjective. You can't say that, like, this thing would have been good or bad because, like, as I say, like, to a lot of people, there is no real good or bad except what humanity has describes these things. Like, the biggest example I can give is, like, if a meteor were to hit our planet, that may be bad to us, but in a universal scale, it's not good or bad. It's just something that happens.
Yeah, you know? It's just, like, something that happens.
And then that causes this chain of effect of the whatever comes next.
If the dinosaurs hadn't been extinct, we wouldn't be here.
Yeah, or we might, you know. Like,
we might, but probably not, because mammals were able to come out of that because the dinosaurs weren't here anymore.
Yeah.
So we probably wouldn't be here. Does that make it a bad thing or a good thing? We don't know.
Yeah. I was reading the other day about, like, and this is kind of a tangent, but feeding into that, like, I wonder how humans would fare up against, like, dinosaurs and stuff, because, like, humans, as far as evolution go, we expend less energy because we're upright on 2 feet. We use gravity to basically carry our motion forwards, really. Like, when we're taking a step, we're kind of just, like, falling. We're basically constantly falling rather than, like, pushing ourselves, which a four-legged animal has to do, because they're distributing more weight on each limb, and so they have to use more energy.
Yeah.
And so humans, like, the way this was phrased was, like, imagine, like, you're this deer or something like that, and suddenly this creature comes out of the woods and starts chasing you. Normally, when you run off, most things, like, if you escape, they'll give up. They'll be like, oh, I'm tired and blah, blah, blah. But humans don't give up. Like, they just kind of have this endurance. And so it's like, imagine you're just this deer and you run off, and then you're just eating your stuff again, and then this human comes out again, and it's just like, shit, I just ran from that, you know? And then you have to do it again and again and again. And then eventually you're just so tired that you just give in and this human eats you.
We also bring a gun to the equation. So.
Yeah, right? We have these brains to, like, just... we're so smart and innovative and ingenious, you know? Like, but even all of that stuff is just, like, we still perceive it in our own little realities. Like, the way that we perceive each and every single moment, like, how I would say, like, we kind of, like, and phrasing this is so weird. It's always weird trying to explain phenomenons to another brain and correctly transfer it over, you know, without, like, making any mistakes. But, like, I think that, like, everyone is kind of in their own surreality or reality. And then, like you said, they're constantly branching off at every single point. Kind of like if we were having, like, a photo. That photo is, like, going off in this direction and in that direction and this direction. Pause.
Yeah. That's the FBI watching us.
Yeah, right? They're like, what are they doing out here recording an episode? They're talking about communist stuff. But essentially, like, we're each within our own reality. Like, completely, I would say completely separate, but also within the same reality. Like, we're sitting here with each other, but... every single split frame, we are no longer ourselves. We're a completely different version of ourselves. Like, we're the version where I am speaking Spanish, or the version where, like, suddenly I stand up to do something, you know. But instead, we're both just sitting here. But we're still, the future is both already happening. Just like if you look into, like, outside into space, like at stars, and you see, you're seeing the past version of those stars, essentially. And so you can look through history. And so those stars are already, like, burnt out, you know. So that's the future that we're looking at. We're kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, but I would also, again, because we're all in this individual reality, you can't, like, let's say if you were to try to jump into the future, like time travel, I think that you would have difficulties with landing in the same reality. You could land in any reality, you know, because it's like your timeline hasn't been decided yet, and so it's like you're skipping through all of these decided timelines that are not just yours, but that are happening all around you, you know. But I've gone on too long. What are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts on it is that we all live in the moment, and we all live within our own realities within our own moment.
Yeah.
And we cross ways, but the way that you see me and the way that I see you, the way that we understand that we see each other might not be the way that we see each other.
It's completely different.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it's just like, when I first learned that some people were colorblind, that blew me away.
Yeah, they experience the world in a completely different way.
And or if you think of a dog, the way a dog experiences,
or a fish,
or a fish, anything, but a dog specifically, because a dog lives in a world of smells, not in the world of visuals. Yeah. Visual is part of his world, but smells are much more important. And so, when you have a dog, if you try to force him to react to the world the way you react to the world, then you're stealing that part of him that he needs to be a dog.
Yeah.
And we're all that way. We all have to be able to experience the world in the way that we need to experience the world ourselves. And at the same time, it's all so incredibly fragile. All of it is, as we found out in the last year and a half, you know, that everything can just fall apart.
Yeah.
For very big things and very little things. But in the end, the only thing that we can prove is what's happening right now to ourselves.
Yeah.
You can't even prove that I was around 20 years ago. Maybe I just imagined it.
Yeah, exactly. There's no epistemic proof of anything except that we have the capability to think and decide, or, like, just be present.
Yeah.
We know that we can be present, but we just don't know how we are each being present in relation to each other, and the relata of that.
So in the end, we have to, we don't have to do anything, but it is useful to just accept the other
yeah.
as they are, and to hope that they accept you
yeah.
as you are, and somehow be able to
walk together,
walk through this life in this world together.
And it's so depressing that like people are unable to do that because of like trauma or mental illness, or you know, like again, their reality shows them that they have to be this thing that cannot coexist.
And and there's a level of self-importance, and you know, I'm probably sounding like a snob right now, but this is a level of self-importance that you have to realize that you're nothing, that you're not an important person.
You are and you aren't.
I mean,
it's both.
Yeah, you're an important person, but you're not. You know, it's like you're in the end. It's not just all about you.
Yeah, it's about everything.
it's about everything.
We talked about this like last time. My idea in theory, the funk, and essentially, it's like the funk would be this like one thing, but we're all individual units within it, and so it's like we are all individually different, but together, you make one. Like
yeah.
if you put everything in a circle, then it's all, you know, the circle.
In the end, we're part of planet Earth.
And beyond that.
And beyond that.
The cosmos.
But we're part of... But here and now, we're part of planet Earth. And we're all part of it.
Yeah.
We're all animals. And, you know, when we die, we become the ground again.
Yeah.
And we have to stop trying to fight that. You know, building these, like, metal coffins to, you know, get ourselves ready for the, you know, to come back.
Yeah. or like some zombie prevention.
Or zombie... Like yeah. Or some bullshit. It's like... Dude, just accept that you're here now, and then someday in the near future you won't be here anymore, and it's okay.
Yeah, and that's just how it works right now, at least.
Yeah,
like there is absolutely the ability to change. Like that could change, you know, in the future, but we're just not at that point.
No, our species hasn't evolved to that yet.
Yeah,
and who knows where we're gonna be in 1,000 years, even if we'll even be here anymore.
Yeah, because. I'm trying not to like repeat myself on this podcast, but quantumly, physicists say that the Big Bang happened about 13.8 billion years ago.
Yeah.
And so if like you take where we are now in 13.8 billion years, it took us that long to, you know, be here in this moment as humans, like for particles to arrange a brain and then like basically like be able to project reality. And so we're all these prediction machines that are just predicting our environments and what's happening next. If you double that, add another 13.8 billion years, you know, from now, you don't know what the possibilities are. Like, if this is what happened in that amount of time, then that double or tripled, like, literally, like, it's almost, it's infinite, you know? Like,
did you ever read Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So there's a concept in that book that I really, really like. You know, they're building that, you know, they have the supercomputer and they ask them, you know, what is the answer
yeah.
to...
Deep
thought, and the answer is 42.
Yeah.
And it's like, what the fuck, dude? And then, and so they build another computer, right, to figure out what that answer means.
Earth.
And that computer is Earth.
Yeah.
And it took thousands of years to build... And in the end, it's not about one individual or one civilization or one family or one country. It's all of our brain power and all the brain power of all the animals and all the plant life together
yeah.
that is computing together to figure out what the answer is.
And if I apply that to the funk, essentially you take that, but then you add in all the other planets. And it's literally, the funk is the experience of everything, of literally... all of space and time and beyond that. And that is the funk. And so, like, if my fist were existence and this is, like, anything else, like, something that we discover later on, it's still encapsulated in, you know, the reality. And then that reality is still within something, and that is all the funk.
Well, if you think about it, our reality right now is limited because we only understand so much.
Yes, absolutely.
But every few years, of course, now it's... our understanding of the world, not my personal understanding of the world, but humanity's understanding of the world has just expanded so dramatically in the last 100 years.
Oh, yeah.
And
Even the last 50 years.
In the last 50 years. But it's still so incredibly limited.
Yeah.
And we have such a long ways to go. And in a way, that's incredibly exciting because, you know, every few years, we see a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, what was absolute magic 1,000 years ago, today we can explain.
Yeah.
I can't, but just there are some very smart people who can.
Like a cell phone. You know, like that level of communication, 100,000 or 1,000 years ago, to the average human, it would be like, you can talk to someone on the other side of the planet? Like,
so one of my favorite, a movie that I appreciate, it's a dick joke and fart joke movie. It's a Hot Tub Time Machine.
I've only seen it once. I need to watch it again.
Okay. Did you see the first one or the second one?
Yeah, I saw the first one.
All right. So in the first one, you know, when they go back, they have their cell phones, and the guys are like, you know, the frat boys are like, this is some Russian super weapon or some bullshit like that.
This is from,
like,
the communists.
And they just went back to the 80s. But, you know, I was in high school in the 80s, and if some dude had come in to my classroom or wherever was at with my iPhone 6 or 7 or whatever the fuck this is, I would have been like, holy shit, that's science fiction. I was trying to explain a friend of mine who is in her 20s, you know, and for her, all this stuff is normal. And, you know, on my phone now, I can look up a movie on my phone and I can airplay it on my TV.
Yeah.
Right? I was trying to explain to her, you don't understand, but to me, that's science fiction.
It's insane.
It's like Star Trek. Like when I was a kid watching Star Trek in the 70s and 80s, it's happening in real time now.
it was almost predicted. And like, just like how in school, like back in the 90s and 2000s, is like, teachers were always like, oh, you're not going to have a calculator with you to like do these things, so you better learn your math now. And it's like, we all carry calculators in our pockets.
Not just a calculator. This is like my brain that I carry in my pocket.
It's a camera. It's the internet, you know, which is that is another concept that is just like, you go back in time and you tell them about this like mass communication where like anyone can share ideas or like values. And it's just, it really is life changing.
So if you imagine what we're, these things that we're experiencing now, in 50 years, if we're still around, the world is going to be yet completely different, and there's going to be gadgets and things that are going to be around that are just going to completely blow us away.
At 30 years old, already I'm experiencing like new apps, kind of like that come out, and it's like the younger generation are all over these things, and it's like, I'm too old to get it. I don't get it. It's like, I do get it, but I'm not to the level that a younger person would, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, as a kid, when you're growing up and you're like talking to all these like things, it's like, oh, you don't know this and that, you old person. It's like, now you're on that side of it. And it's just like, wow, it's just like, culture just changes. I would say that like every 10 years is the point where it's just like, things are completely different every 10 years.
Yeah. You know, you have all these, this is irrelevant and relevant at the same time. It's like all these, you know, I used to be so into movies in the 90s, and now I'm just not into it anymore because I do other things, but I don't recognize any of the movie stars anymore.
Right?
I have no idea who these people are, and they're like super famous and winning Oscars, and like people, I'm like, I don't know who this person is.
Yeah, everyone's
been replaced.
And I used
to be so into this, and now I have no idea who any of these people are.
Yeah. It really is a thing of the generations and the culture gaps.
And the funny thing is, those people feel like it must be difficult in a way because they feel they're so freaking important because their whole generation knows who they are. But in 20 years, most of those people will be forgotten.
But like, even then, it's like, they were important because like, for even if it was like for a split second, like they had that fame and it influenced X amount of people, like either thousands or, you know, or...
Oh, absolutely. I'm not saying no. It's like, you know, I was just talking to somebody about Johnny Carson and they're like, who's that? I'm like,
yeah,
you don't know who Johnny Carson is? Like, who doesn't know who Johnny Carson is? that wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, the 50s, 60s, 70s or...
He was still on in the 80s.
Oh, wow. See, that's insane. Yeah. And so it's like, really, that was only 50 years ago.
Not that long ago.
Yeah.
Not even 50 years ago.
And I think what feeds into that is like, especially stuff like, I don't think a lot of people, well, I can't say a lot of people, because a lot of people do think about these things, but also a lot of people don't, about like how slavery ended only like a few, like 100 years ago, like 50 yeah. years ago, 70 years ago. The Emancipation Proclamation was like what, 1935 or something?
It hasn't been that long. There are people alive today whose grandparents were slaves.
Exactly. And so it's just like people think that this history was so long ago, but really it was just two generations ago.
But that's because we don't teach it in schools.
Yeah, exactly.
We're in complete denial of our own history in America.
It's lost media.
You know, in France, you know, everywhere in Europe, you learn about the Holocaust and World War II like before you can fucking walk.
Wow.
Whereas here, you barely even learn about slavery before you go to college.
Yeah, there's
like
no,
people should know about it from elementary school on. This is our original sin as a country.
Yeah,
not just African Americans, but the Chinese people who built the railroad. Like,
yeah.
You know, the murder of millions of Native Americans because of disease and war. And we don't talk about these things, and we should talk about. I mean, everybody does talk about it, but I mean, it's not taught in school.
Yeah, like personal for me, I remember my first history class in college when we were actually going into like the Trail of Tears and like just like the actual American history of like how terrible America has been, and just being like, wow, like I am 18 years old, and all through elementary school, middle school, and high school, these things were just like romanticized to where it's just like these white men came in and just like were like these saviors and like they did all these like great things and they built America and we're here because of that. But really, it's just like it was forced upon like all these people. It was just like it's a disease almost. Like America was a virus.
But I mean, to be fair, you know, world populations have moved around forever, ever since there's been humans. And, you know, the Europeans have, of course, colonized half the world. But, you know, on the other side, you know, the Japanese weren't exactly very innocent either, and neither were the Chinese. And, you know, and so there's no innocent anywhere.
Yeah.
Nobody's innocent. You know, there's genocide being acted on now, you know, in places around the world. So none of us are innocent.
Yeah, yeah.
and this movement, you know, yeah, whatever. I don't know what I'm trying to say. But it's movement of population and the murder of the local population. It's not a new thing. It's just, you know, America, maybe we're the latest.
Yeah, we're what's causing the most impact of our colonization currently.
Yeah.
If I had to make a... I don't know.
So what do you do this? Why is this important to you? Why do you feel the need to talk with people and exchange ideas with people and recording it?
So essentially, my thoughts on that are, again, that whole idea of this moment has been provided by that 13.8 billion years. So like that, you know, happened, and for some reason we are here right now, you know, talking in this moment, and that's going to affect someone. You know, someone's out there listening to this, and they're also not, you know, like I can't make these promises, but like if this goes out there and it's forever, then it's going to have, and it already is having significant impact. Us being here right now, you know, like we're influencing the entire environment around us. Like we're not having direct impact. Like those people playing frisbee over there aren't impacted by us, but they also are, because, you know, like we're in the same environment. Like if we could go over there and just be like hello, or, you know, talk to them or anything, we could literally change reality, you know. And so like this is kind of trying to influence that. And additionally,
but I guess, I'm sorry, I'm going to cut you off.
Yeah.
Are you searching for something, or are you trying to give something?
Both. I am looking for more epistemic answers on like how, again, like we talked about, we each view reality in a different way. And so it's kind of my goal to branch or connect that, you know, like imagine if we were eventually like able to ask, what is life? You know, and like, no matter if I were to say like blue, you would understand what I mean. Rather than be like, okay, he said blue, so I think in my own terms what he meant. the epistemics of just like, you absolutely know what each of us are talking about and what life is and like how we got there, you know. And so by talking with people, you're expanding that, because like, again, we have been put in this moment for some reason. And so either, and it doesn't have to be good or bad progress. It's just progress. And that is how I believe the funk is experienced. And so like, we are basically teaching, or we are causing the experience of the universe or reality to learn from this moment. And so now it knows what this moment is like, you know, for forever.
And are you open to anything, or are you heading in a particular direction? Is there something that you want to achieve, or are you just doing this with the hope that whatever it is that you'll achieve will come to you?
It's both. I'm doing something in hopes that like something happens. Of course, you know, the like we talked about, you got to do, you know,
you for have to do. To happen. If you don't do, nothing happens.
Exactly. If you don't, then no one will.
Yeah.
And so, I lost my train of thought. I'm blanking.
That's all good. You're doing this because you're both searching for what might be out there in front of you and that road that you've taken.
Yeah.
But you also feel like you have something to share with the world.
Yeah. And then additionally, by doing this, you learn from it. And so like, even if this, like what we're talking about, I go back to in 10 years and everything I said was completely wrong, right? If we didn't have this moment, then I wouldn't have experienced that. And I wouldn't, in those 10 years, learn from this moment. I would just, you know, continue down kind of like whatever path, you know, like, and so the goal is to just keep providing moments that provide for the funk or each other, you know, and just branch off. And it is conceptually, it's weird and odd, but like, I think that that is such an important thing for.
But I'm going to take this off in another direction. You do a lot of things, like you're doing podcasts, you do improv. You also are a musician. You had this project going on for a while with the notebooks. Are you still doing the notebooks?
Yeah, draw book. Which I have in the car. I'll get you okay. Before I leave.
You have a lot of things happening. Why do you continue doing all these things? Maybe why not focus on one thing? Or is it all these things? Are all these things connected?
Yeah. So what I would like... My goals with everything is, so 9 years ago I was like, I want to live as an artist. I want to be supported as an artist so that I can support others, you know, to try to do the same. And so like in that journey, it's like, if I were able to figure out what it takes to be a normal person and just like to go out and do, and then if I find success, I would like to share like how, what I did, you know, to reach that success, and that how maybe you could do that as well. And so now that I'm at this point,
so what is success to you?
Just having done, you know, but like,
is success financial? Is success
so for me, financial success is only successful, to the point where it's like I can keep doing more. And so, like, there has been so much, like, so if someone were to like look at all the things that I've done, like draw book, the Who'd Have Thunk, Artist Ceilings, some people can look at that and be like, oh, you've wasted your life. You don't have a lot of money. You're not rich. You're not famous. What have you done? You know, like, you've spent all this time doing these things and you've gone nowhere. But I haven't. I've gone so many places. I have lived. I could say that, like, if I were to die tomorrow, it's like I've done most than most people have, you know, in their lives. Like, I have 70 albums. Like, that's unheard of for many people. And so, no, I'm not like rich or famous, but I only want to have enough money to keep doing, and then eventually the hopes of that doing is for the money to come back in and provide for what I'm doing, and then to be able to produce for other people and to provide the same experience.
So, but there's, like, I've been writing poetry since I've been 10 years old, and I haven't done much of that this last 12 to 14 months.
Mm-hmm.
But I have this one long poem that I keep going back to every 2-3 months or something. But it's important to me to learn how to communicate through my art and to do the best that I can with my art And I've been working on it, again, since I've been 10, and I'm going to turn 50 this year, so for almost 40 years. And I'm still not happy with it. So, and I'm nothing I've ever written is great. And some of it's good. But do you feel like there's one particular art form that you want to just keep doing because you just want to be the best that you can at that particular art form? Or you haven't found that art form yet?
So, for me, it's kind of like what I'm trying to, I guess, get at is that no matter what, like, focus you get in, like, you can have a direct focus and, like, lean into that and go directly down that path. But, like, what I'm, I guess, trying to showcase is that anyone, you have the power to do it. Like, oh my gosh, it's starting to rain. You have the power to do. Like, if you take the time, like, if you are, like, I like, suffered through, we can go to my car, I guess.
It's not raining that bad yet.
Yeah, it's just sprinkling, but just in case.
Yep.
Growing up, I was kind of depressed. I grew up a kind of a fat kid, you know, like, and I had, like, some friends, but I never had, like, close friends. And that gave me some trauma growing up, you know. And so after college, when it was like everyone was kind of like leaving, and it's like I didn't really have any like super close friends in the town, you know, it's like I was like, what am I gonna do with my life? Like, what actually gives me true happiness, you know? Like, what can I do to not be sad, and what can I do to not for others the same? Because it's like, what upsets me the most is like we live in this country and in this world where it's like we don't help each other. I mean, some people do, but it's like
I don't know if that's true. I mean, everything that I've done in the last year and a half, I've been able to do because I've been helped by so many incredible people.
And that's, again, that's why I say that, like, it doesn't apply for everyone. Because some people do help each other. But then there's also, like, the world of capitalism that we live in that just, like, kind of halts that. And I'm not gonna. I kind of am talking out of my butt right now. Like, you're really giving me a lot to, like, how do I...
See, here's the thing.
...communicate this. And that right, it's that right there, is I want to learn how to communicate properly all of these struggles to anyone. And be like, if you are struggling or you want to create something, like, how to do that. And I'm trying to also collect other people's experiences to, again, form the best way of communication on how to communicate, like, just life or existence, like, how to exist.
But you're doing it now because, look, you're giving me an experience. You called me, what was it, 2 days ago? You said, hey, dude, you want to do a podcast with me? And I'm like, sure, I'm not doing anything on Monday. This sounds fun. Well, I mean, I did a lot of things today. I achieved all the things that I set out to do today. And then I get to do this fun thing with you. And, you know, last time we talked, we recorded another podcast for me.
Yeah.
And it's cool. So you are doing it. You're sharing what you do. And I think that's how, you know, that's how it should work. You need to give of yourself, not for financial reason. And not for without an ulterior motive. I don't feel like you have an ulterior motive for this conversation. I certainly don't have an ulterior motive for being here. I'm just here because I think you're a cool dude, and I like doing this kind of stuff, and this is fun. This forces me to think outside of who I am. It's like some of that earlier podcast that we did today. It was difficult for me because, you know, that's I don't think in these terms, and that's how you do it. People help you when you go out there and push yourself and give of yourself to other people.
Yeah.
Like when you give your skills and you give your time and you're not asking anybody back from it, I'm not saying it's always going to work, but that's the best way for the world to come back to you and give you what you need.
Yeah.
And I know that's, again, totally fucking cliche. We're not reinventing anything right now. It's just, you know, and that's the thing I had to remind myself, you know, when we went into lockdown, And it was, I was so freaking depressed and so sick and just so alone, like everybody else in this country. And I, you know, I don't have a partner, and I was in, by myself in my apartment. And after about 6 weeks or 2 months, I'm like, I got to get the fuck out of this apartment. And so I started volunteering on a farm where I could social distance, and we weren't, you know, and I just did that. And yeah. I just did it. I just went out there and I worked my ass off to help other people, and then it paid off.
And so I guess what I'm trying to, and again, I don't think I'm ever going to have an exact definition of what I'm trying to do, because it's a bunch of things. It's an amalgamation of things. But I really am trying to showcase the importance of each of us. Like, no matter what you're doing, like, even if you're out there right now and you feel like you're going nowhere in life, like, you have nothing, like, you just work the same job, or you even just sit on the couch all day, or anything. It doesn't matter what or who you are. Even if you're a brick, like, even if you're a blade of grass, you have so much significance. And, like, it's both predetermined, everything that's going to happen to you. You are going to suffer. You're going to go through suffering, and you're also going to have good moments. You know, Newton's law is every action causes an equal and opposite reaction. And so, like, you're going to have great moments, and you're also going to have bad moments. And that's what makes you who you are. And so, like, you also, even though you're being shaped by your environment, you also are doing the same to everything around you. And so, I guess, where I'm trying to personally get at is I've been working on how to build that voice to help other people and to have this influence, like, to get here in this moment. Like, if I were to have approached you, like, 9 years ago and been like, hey, Francois, you want to get, like, do this? You want to just hang out and do this stuff? You know, like, you would have been like, who are you? You know, like, well, I don't know you. And so it's like,
I don't even know how we first met anyways. How did that happen?
So we talked about that on one of your podcasts.
Shoot. We're repeating ourselves.
No, I'm glad I listened to him, and because I had forgotten too. And so, like, how it happened was, like, I went to this concert. Like, a friend made this status being like, hey, I have an extra ticket to AWOL Nation, you know, and I only knew the song Sail by them, but I was still like, I enjoy music and I enjoy just, like, taking these moments. And I hadn't hung out with this friend since, like, high school. Like, and we didn't even really hang out. I was just, you know, doing one of those moments of life, just being like, I'm going to be present and I'm going to, like, take this chance and do it, even if it's, like, uncomfortable or not. And so I was like, hey, if no one takes that ticket, I'll go with you. And so, like, eventually the time came and she's like, hey, no one, you know, stepped up, so you want to go? And I was like, absolutely. And so then after that, it was like a few weeks later, you had posted a status looking for guests for your podcast, and I wasn't friends with you, but she was. And so, like, she commented my name on your status being like, hey, Sean, you should hook this up. And so I did, and that's how we got together. And that is, again, that's the fuck providing, you know? Yeah. Like,
and that's also being open. Like, you know, I apparently put that thought out there on social media. Your friend saw it and put you out there and connected us. And we were both open to meeting each other, even though we didn't know who we were.
And all of those events got us to this moment right here, which is so significant. And so that's kind of what I'm trying to show in this writing of the funk, is that, like, when you lean into those moments and you take those chances, it provides. It comes back, you know.
Absolutely. And you, yes, you know.
And it's not always going to be good. There are many bad moments in it.
It's not always going to be good. When I did my podcast, I recorded my podcast from my apartment. You know, I did briefly record it from a brewery, and then mostly from my apartment. And it's like I invited total strangers to come to my apartment and to record an hour-long conversation with me when I knew almost nothing about them.
Yeah.
And that was fun.
It really is, because, like, you meet these people that you would have never met. You would have existed your whole lifetime with these people that are, like, within a few miles of you. You're, like, your radius. And it's just so life-changing. And it's, like, for some reason, life was, like, this is important. I need you to experience these moments, you know? And, like, it helped you guide you into that
But again, we're back to the same thing. You have to do it, whatever that it is. When I stepped into that radio studio, and I was so scared my first show, or the first time I did, I was part of a show. I certainly didn't do anything in that show. And 6 years later, when I stepped away from writing on the air, I was this dude that everybody knew as the guy who interviewed poets and writers and filmmakers. And I met so many people in that 6 years, and it made it easier for me to publish my books.
Yeah.
It made it easier for me to sell my books. And I remember one time, for a while people would contact me to be on the show. You know, total strangers would contact me to be on the show to review their books. I used to write reviews of books. I don't do that anymore either. And one time one person asked me in her email, she said, how do you do this? How do I know how to self-publish? How do I know if my book's any good? How? She had like a million questions. I'm saying, first and foremost, you have to put yourself out there.
You just got
to
do.
You got to, I don't know where you live. I forget. I think she was from Alabama somewhere. But it's just, or Atlanta. You just got to step out and find out who your community is, who your neighboring community is. You have to put yourself out there and figure it out, and then you'll figure it out. It'll come to you. Or maybe something different will come to you, but something will come to you.
Yeah.
But if you just stay in your apartment and live inside your head, which is what I've done most of my life, to be fair, nothing happens. And that's one of the things that I've learned.
You can't say nothing happens. It just takes longer to reach the point of, I guess, let's say connection.
But once I started getting out, forcing myself out of my shyness, I'm a really shy person, and I'm a really awkward person with strangers. And when I force myself out of that weirdness is when the world got better for me.
Yeah, I completely agree. And for a lot of people, it's like it's very difficult for them, or they think it's impossible, but it's like you just have to take baby steps. You really have to just be confronted with being present. It's not easy. And that's, again, that's why I think improv is so awesome and important, because I've seen it change people's lives like that. Like shy people who come in, or even like when I was doing my level 1 through 5 at station, one of our classmates had Asperger's. He was an older gentleman with Asperger's, and he was, you know, learning, he was searching like how to properly, you know, better relate with people, or like have conversations and do improv.
Yeah.
And he's one of my favorite people. Like, I love Paul, and it's like he improved so much. Or just like other people who are just like shy and like have no public speaking skills. It's like I see them doing improv for a year, and suddenly it's like they get on stage and they're so happy to be there. Like, they have these smiles on their face and they're not afraid of it. And
you have to do whatever it is that you do. You have to do something.
But also you don't. You know, like, as far as reality goes, it's like, you don't have to do, but if you want, or if you need, you know, it's like, you need to take action.
I'm going to disagree with you there. I think you have to do something. I mean, again, in reality, you don't have to do anything. You get just to stay at home and feel sorry for yourself all the time. And I get really, really, really bad depressions, and sometimes I can't even get out of the house. But I realized that I have to relearn this lesson every few years. And, you know, before the lockdown, I was beverage director, head bartender at this little restaurant, and I was making good money for the first time in a very long time. And I hated my life. I didn't hate my job, but I didn't really like my job. Mm-hmm. I didn't like where I was doing, you know, artistically. I was drinking way too much, eating unhealthily. And then COVID happened. And then all of a sudden, I was by myself. My whole life had stopped. And I had to completely reinvent myself. But my choices were, I can stay here and be really depressed and feel sorry for myself, or I force myself to go out there and see. Yeah. I had no idea at the time that I was going to open my own business, that I was going to open a beverage company. I had no idea that I was going to work on a farm for a year. I had no idea that I was going to experience these things that are so incredibly different from anything I've ever experienced before. And yet, today, because I forced myself out of that apartment, I'm so much happier today than I was a year and a half ago.
I think that, like, that bleeds into where it's like you have to suffer. Like sometimes it's crazy how like those moments when you hit rock bottom, that's when the inspiration comes. And it's like, I can either just stay here at the bottom of this hole, or I can try to climb out, you know?
Yeah.
And you may not even get out of the hole, but at least you tried. At least you made it halfway. And at least when people come in and they find your body, they're like, wow, he tried to get out. Like, look at these, like, you know, claw marks or something. Like, you can see the struggle of the person or the, you know, like the goal. And so it's like, you either give up and you just stay there, you know, or you take action. But that's so hard for some people because it's like their trauma or their suffering is so overwhelming that they're just like, I give up. And, you know, the suicide comes into play. But it's like also just like we're talking about, when you see the people who don't do that and they keep going and they decide to do, you know, I have seen so many people just like flourish. Like suddenly they're just like, they find where they need to be in life, you know? And I'm not saying that it's going to be perfect forever, because those people still will, you know, you will have moments of suffering, but it's like you can see the huge dramatic change of just like, they are no longer within like a hole of shit, you know, like
yeah.
They've been able to climb out of this pipe, you know, and it just takes time and doing.
But you gotta do. That's where I, you know, in the end, like you said, you don't have to do it.
You don't.
But in the end, if you want to become a better person, if you want to connect with the world and the universe and with others such as yourself and other people, you have to get out of your apartment. Yeah. And you have to go do something.
And I think that's where, like, the different levels of, like, selfishness and selflessness come into play. So it's like, if a person is super selfish, they can't do that. Like, they get stuck, you know, because it's like they can't reach out for help because it's like they think that they have to do all these things. And I think that's where you get like sexism and racism and classism and stuff, because it's like they just do not know how to communicate. But like, if someone were to like help them out and like take the extra special time to teach these people on how to communicate rather than isolate them because of the terrible things they've done, you know, it's like, that's how we learn. But it's the thing is that like, trauma feeds trauma. So it's like you want to distance yourself from anyone causing trauma. Yeah,
but they have to want to change too.
That's
a very important thing. That's so important because...
And most people don't.
Yeah.
Most people do not want to change.
I interviewed this guy, Christian Picciolini, who was basically the leader of one of the biggest... white supremacist groups in America.
Holy cow.
And he changed himself. He realized who he was and what he had become and how he fell into it. And and it was painful for him. He forced himself to change. And since then, he's written a book. He's been, you know, on every TV show in America talking about racism and white supremacists and all that. And he's become this incredible dude. Who did some horrible things when he was young.
And again,
it's not necessarily entirely forgivable.
Yeah, yes.
But
he's holding himself accountable.
Exactly.
And that's the most important, not the most important thing, but that's what helps so much. And that's what I am seeing is that like many, many humans just cannot hold themselves accountable, or they don't know how to. Don't know how to properly apologize, or when they even attempt to do so, to hold themselves accountable or apologize for their past actions, again, they don't know how. And so they do it in a way that causes a mass reaction that isolates them even further, that makes them, again, pull back from even further holding themselves accountable.
One of the things that I hate the most at work, whether it's my company or working for other people, is when you make a mistake, just... admit it. Say, hey,
it's
look,
so hard, but just, like, just look, do it.
I
just
fucked
do
up. It. Yeah. This is what I did. I fucked up. What can I do to repair it? What can we do to make this better? And I found that most people, when you tell them that, they'll say...
They understand, yeah.
They understand.
And again, I think the key word there is most people.
Yeah.
There are still always going to be those people where it's like, even if you have the most heartfelt, like, or wholesome, just like, oh, man, sorry, I didn't, I bumped into your pie and knocked it off the shelf. You know, it's like, there's nothing you can do. You know, you've apologized and stuff, but it's not enough. It's like, why can't we just like, you know, take the time, make another pie or something like that, you know, work together or figure something out that like is a alternate rather than like be like, oh, you have fucked up. And now I will never talk to you again because you did this thing. And like, even if you hold yourself accountable, I want you out of my life. You knocked off my pie off the shelf, you know, or any other metaphor. And I think that's what we need to start helping each other is like, and I'm starting to see that switch of cancel culture coming into accountable culture. And there's even a friend that I have, Catherine Way, who has been posting a lot of stuff like that recently. Where, like, a few years ago, she was very active in the cancel, like, the not on men. She was very active in, like, finding people and, like, calling them out and doxing them and stuff. But now she's very, like, what I was doing was, like, a responsive trauma. You know, it's, like, really what we need to do is be with those people and help them out and stuff. And I had the same feelings, too, but I didn't know how to express that without maybe getting canceled myself, you know. Because like, you're going against what they're saying, you know. Yeah. But it really is. It's just it is holding yourself accountable and also trying to hold each other accountable.
But it's also how we deal with it. You know, have you ever worked in the restaurant industry?
Yeah.
So did you ever work with that chef who's always yelling at the front of the house staff, or the GM who does not know how to manage people? So his idea of managing people is just to yell at everybody. Yeah. And that just makes everything worse.
It makes it worse. Analogy that I could use is like, if you want good employees, like people are, and I'm not saying people are dogs. People are kind of like dogs, where in the fact that like we train each other to do things and to have actions. And so like, let's say that you have a dog, and you are trying to get them to do an action. Like let's say like go through a hoop, right? If you tell the dog to go through the hoop, and you didn't train this dog to go through the hoop, and it doesn't go through the hoop, how can you be mad at the dog for not doing what it was your job to train this dog to do? And so it's up for managers to do the same thing for employees. If you do not teach these employees literally everything to do, and even when they make a mistake, it's not constructive to punish them. You should be like, you should hold them accountable and be like, okay, yes, you messed up. But now it's my job again to train you again and remind you how to properly.
Where most managers, most bad managers go wrong is that they're unable to see the potential in the employee.
Exactly. I could just fire this person and get another person.
It's not even that. It's like a bad manager. Like if you work in a restaurant, I'm just going to go back to restaurants because I've worked in restaurants and hotels my whole life. And if you're in a restaurant, you're paying people $2.13 an hour or $10 an hour, you got to understand that that's very little money in today's world.
It's not a living wage.
It's not a living wage. But if you want them to do these tasks for you, then you have to not just be able to train them to do these tasks, but you have to also see where they're going to be best at in the restaurant. Absolutely. And within your team.
Yeah.
And a bad manager does not know how to see potential in people.
I
like
agree.
All he sees is that 20-year-old little boy or little girl that is driving him fucking bonkers because they won't listen. Well, you're treating them with disrespect.
Yeah.
You're pissing on their personality. Obviously, they're not going to do anything that you want them to
yeah.
do. And they're going to do the bare minimum.
You only focus on their
negative.
Mistakes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like every mistake is paperwork. And then they see that paperwork adding up, but they don't see all the other stuff that they're actually doing, you know?
Yeah. And if you were to, for just a moment, try to view that person, one, as an adult and as a human being that has feelings, that thinks, that whatever, and you start to think, where is that person going to work the best with hers or his personality within my team? And if you can't do that, you're never going to be a good manager.
Yeah. If I had to make a case on like how I think the workforce should change, I think that people should be trained for every position. Like when you're at a job, I think you should be trained like to be the boss, essentially. Like
yeah.
you should be trained to know how to cover every position, and then everyone essentially kind of just rotates every once in a while. Or like basically it's like if someone needs help, everyone is trained to help you out. But the thing is that the boss is like afraid that like, oh, if I train you to be the boss too, then I fuck up, then I lose my job. But it shouldn't be like that. It's like if you're training everyone to be the boss and you fuck up, then all the other bosses can raise you up and be like, oh, man, you fucked up, but we got your back, buddy.
I don't necessarily agree with that, but I agree to some degree.
Yeah, exactly. It's not perfect. Yeah.
But, yeah, I once helped open a restaurant in West Austin, and the man I was working for, unfortunately, had never worked in the restaurant industry, and I should never have accepted that job, but I did, and that was a learning experience for me. But we asked him what his position was going to be when we were opening. And he said, well, I'm going to be the front of the house manager and the head bartender. I'm like, do you know how to do any of these jobs?
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I can figure it out. I'm like, okay, this is going to suck.
Yeah.
So he finally made me the head bartender and the beverage director and all that good stuff. And I was one day he had forgotten to schedule a bar back for me or even a second bartender. So it was actually busy. I was slammed. I was behind the bar. It was a huge ass bar with 20 seats on it. Plus I was making drinks for the staff. And he finally came behind the first time he ever did this. And for a minute there, I thought better of him. He said, what can I do to help? And I looked around my bar. I says, well, you can't make drinks because you don't know how to make drinks. You can't pour beer and sell beer because you don't know anything about beer or anything about wine. My dishes are piling up. And I didn't say this from a place of negativity. I said this answering his question. I said, the one thing you can do to help me out right now is to wash my glasses for me so that I can take care of the customers. He said, oh, I don't do that. I'm the boss. I don't wash dishes.
No. See, like, he asked you, what can I do to help? And, like, you gave him something to do. And, like, that should have been what he done. Like, and that's what I'm saying is, like, that's why you should be trained, or each of us should train each other to, like, know how to do these things, or not be like, oh, I'm above that or I'm below that. You know, you should just be like, okay, if I am needed at any point, and, like, and y'all are all doing these things and I'm available or anyone's available, you should be able to be like, hey, I need you on glasses right now.
But the one person in a restaurant or a bar that should absolutely know how to do everything in that restaurant or bar is the boss.
Yeah, is the boss or the owner. And from what I can see, at least in as far as history goes, is that's never the case. It's usually
That's not true. I've worked with tons of bosses
who that are good.
Amazing bosses. Who can do absolutely everything, who work circles around you, and those are the people I work the hardest for.
I agree. I agree. I agree completely. And that's why, like, at so many low-paying jobs and industries, that's when you usually see it. And it's like, they have a much higher turnover rate because it's like you can't get along with these people who will never change and never see the potential and never hold themselves accountable.
And those are the people that are self-important and have huge egos and don't know how to do shit.
Yeah, I agree. they only know how to get into their position and provide for themselves.
Right. And fuck everybody else.
Well, Francois, it's starting to rain. This has been about an hour, so this is about the cutting point. Is there anything else that you'd like to say before we go?
No, just thank you for doing this. This is fun. This has been a wonderful Monday, and thanks to you. Thank you, man.
Absolutely, man. Thanks you for being here and everything.
I hope I wasn't too stupid in some of my answers.
Again, there is no... even if other people make you feel stupid for what you've done everything flawlessly. Like, you were just yourself, and that's all I was expecting you to be, you know?
Then it's all good. Then.
You killed it, yeah.
Cool.
So, again, thanks for being on, and hopefully I'll have you on another time.
I would love to. Let's do this again. It's since I don't have my podcast anymore, we're going to have to do
this. The year thing? So April 19th, a year from now.
Exactly.
All right.
If we're both still alive, we're doing this again.
Well, I'll see you then.
Yep.
Y'all take care. Thanks for listening.